Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. More violence overnight in the Ferguson area. Another police shooting. More demonstrations and rallies. Let's get an update now from St. Louis Public Radio's Chris McDaniel, who spent the better part of last night in Ferguson. Chris, nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Don.
You know, obviously, the headline is that there's been another shooting involving a police officer. What can you tell us about that incident, Chris?
Well, you know, we're about 11 hours out, so we don't know that much. We know that around 1 a.m., a St. Louis County officer shot and critically injured a man who allegedly pointed a gun at officers. We don't know much more than that, and I think it's going to take some time to find out more details. We also know that there was another shooting not involving police that police currently believe it was a drive-by shooting. That occurred about an hour earlier, so around midnight. Both of these were near West Florissant Avenue in Ferguson, though.
Is there any suggestion, has anyone made a connection between the shooting of the woman in the drive-by and the confrontation with the man who I understand, at least I've heard, was masked in that confrontation with the officer?
Well, it's way too early to know on any of that. And I mean, right now, we don't even really know if the drive-by shooting was in any way related to the demonstrations that were going on in the preceding hours. It's really too soon for a lot of this information, but I would imagine we'll hear within the coming days and weeks.
Let's move back a couple of hours. You attended the session with Al Sharpton last night.
Yes, and Michael Brown's parents were also there, and the session, the service was really all about, you know, trying to get this community to come together and beginning to heal and really to advocate for peaceful demonstrations. Michael Brown's parents were really basically begging for the demonstrators to be peaceful. Al Sharpton had a quote here that I have written down. Respect the family. They haven't even buried their son. Don't go out there and start stuff in his name. And after the service let out, they took offerings for the family. After the service let out, probably a couple hundred people were demonstrating outside, very peaceful. Police officers weren't nearby, but about a mile south at the Quick Trip, which was burned down a few days ago, that's sort of where a couple dozen people were having a standoff with police who were there with a couple of armored vehicles. I made my way down there shortly after the service. It was a tense situation. People would inch forward, and when they would inch forward, that's when a red dot would appear on their chest, and then they would move back. Then the couple hundred of people who were demonstrating outside of the church came down, and they were, you know, much more organized than the other crowd that was demonstrating there. They were also a younger crowd, and, you know, although I'm sure it was somewhat intimidating having a few hundred people, you know, making their way toward the police line, you know, to the credit of both sides, neither side escalated. The demonstrators stopped and they sat and they prayed, and then shortly after they left. And you know, while I was there, there was no tear gas that was sprayed on the crowd, and while I was there, the crowd, you know, didn't rush toward police or escalate the conflict in that way.
In talking with people, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, continue.
I was just going to ask, in talking to people out there, did they feel that the presence of someone like Sharpton, a national figure, but an outsider, that his presence in a situation like this is useful?
You know, I spoke to some people at the church, and I think that did they think it was useful? But, you know, those were the people who decided to show up at the church. I think that there's also a generational divide. I think that, you know, Al Sharpton is sort of a community leader for sort of the older crowd, but a lot of the younger people who are demonstrating, I don't know if they see Sharpton, you know, as a leader on this.
I've heard more than once that Nelly needs to be out there. That's who the kids might listen to, or someone very much like him.
Well, I'm sure that that would solve all of the conflict if Snelling was out there.
Well, it might help. You never know. One question I have is regard to the voices that are being heard in all of this. Seems to me we have voices coming from the churches and we have voices coming from the streets. Is there any real indication that the voices from the churches are being heard on the streets?
Well, I think that the voices are related. I mean, you know, a couple hundred of the demonstrators last night, they showed up to the church and they, you know, listened to the service, listened to Michael Brown's family and listened to his attorneys speak about Michael Brown. So, you know, I wouldn't say that they're, you know, two separate voices by any means. I think that they're related, but definitely not separate.
Is the feeling of tension on the streets any different today than it was a couple of days ago?
You know, it's tough to say. I'm not out there today. Last night, you know, when I was there before midnight, it really seemed like this night was going to be peaceful. And, you know, before 11:30, when a lot of the demonstrators disbanded, and so you were left with small pockets of activity, but not any sort of large crowd. And before they disbanded, it was a very peaceful event. Neither side was escalating. But, you know, after you had people disperse and just these small pockets, largely moving into the residential areas, that's when things got violent, and that's when I heard gunshots.
There is a positive sign today, and that is my understanding is that a number of young people are out there helping to clean up some of the areas that were damaged in the looting incidents the other night. I saw a piece on television last night. It was very touching with young kids going out and helping clean up the Quick Trip site, the Quick Trip was gutted, of course. So that's a positive sign, and that's good.
Yes, I've been seeing some tweets about it, and I think that we have a couple of reporters out there who are covering the cleanup today.
Okay, Chris McDaniel, anything you'd like to add before we say goodbye?
I think that just about does it. Thanks, Don.
Okay, that's Chris McDaniel from St. Louis Public Radio talking about last night's activity in Ferguson. We will continue to be on that story. As Chris indicated, we have reporters on the scene today and all day, and we'll be hearing from them throughout the day. Thanks again, Chris McDaniel. Now, moving on, societal and generational shifts are not uncommon. Sometimes trying to figure out the whys and wherefores of these new norms leads to a lot of head-scratching. Our guest today has looked at a couple of new trends and given some thought to why young women outnumber and outperform their male counterparts in college and before, and why young couples are now waiting so much longer to marry than did their parents. He's Dr. Wes Crenshaw, a board-certified family psychologist in the Kansas City metro area. He is the author of I Always Wanted to Be Where I'm Not, Successful Living with ADD and ADHD. Wes, nice to have you back with us again.
Nice to be here, Don.
Before we move on to the subject at hand, I have to ask you, because you are a professional psychologist, as you drive into St. Louis, what are you thinking about what's going on and what is feeding the kind of action that we've been seeing?
Well, I appreciated Chris's very calm and moderate and reserved response to it. I think that's the first thing people have to do is to step back and wait to find out what's really going on, because we jump to conclusions so quickly in crises like this, and then we find out things are not as they seem. The Columbine incident is a great example. Everybody decided that was about bullying and these kids were bullied, and years later it's come out that, you know, this isn't at all true, and a whole generation of bullying literature came out of Columbine that really had nothing to do with the incident. So I appreciate that. I think you were so correct. There's a generational divide here. Young people are not getting, I think, very good role models. And I mean of all ethnicities and races in this society. We are certainly not a post-racial world at this point. And I think some of the just pure nastiness at the national and local level between adults, kids maybe aren't sitting there watching, television news each evening, seeing how people talk to each other, but they feel that level of tension, especially around race, where you have voter suppression and things like that. Kids feel that through the adults, and a lot of times adults aren't leading very well.
You know, I think Chris might have not have thought that I was serious when I mentioned Nelly just as a symbolic thing. But the fact of the matter is that they do need somebody they can connect with.
Well, they do. And folks in our age group, you know, I connect with teenagers every week, but that's in a very specialized place. And I don't think I can hop out to Ferguson today and deliver a speech as a 51-year-old white guy that's going to really appeal. And I think even in the black community, there are a lot of adults in our age range that are trying very hard. And religious leaders who are always the center of that community or critical links in that community are going to have a harder time with young people, because to say that they feel disaffected is an understatement. And that's true for a lot of young people today, and particularly those who are non-majority are feeling really left out.
Any other means you can think of to reach them?
You know, it's not a very good crisis management strategy. It starts before the crisis, where you really are reaching out. I had some of the best conversations when I've been in St. Louis before with young black men I run into in different environments around here. And to talk with them and to learn about their experience is so interesting. And they're just kind of informal opportunities when I'm out and about, and to get to know what their experience is. And you get the impression that sometimes people aren't listening to them. And when somebody starts listening, they have a lot to say. And I think there is a critical importance in civil disobedience in a situation in this. It's critically important to say no, but that message has to be a peaceful message. It has to be a message people will listen to, because the minute it starts to look like hooliganism. I can't even say it.
Hooliganism?
Thank you. The minute it looks like hooliganism, then everyone turns off the neural pathway between their brain and their ears, and they just see craziness. And they don't want to hear about the crucial message of inequality and poverty and justifiable anger that is present in that situation.
I think what a lot of people are afraid of, who hope that something good can come out of all of this, and this has happened before, is when the incident is over, people are all up in arms and near hysteria when it's going on. But once it's over, it kind of goes away and is put back in that box again until the next time it happens.
Yeah, it's such a good point. And folks in our age remember Watts riots in Detroit and Baltimore, and in Lawrence, we remember the burning of the Union, which is a little different. We don't remember nearly as well the critical undertones and political issues that are important about those things. And I would like to believe that maybe this situation, in my hopeful little fantasy, will be something we remember for change as opposed to burning stuff down. And I sure hope that folks can make that happen.
Well, let's leave it at that for the moment for our conversation. We'll take a break and come back and talk about the things that you're here to talk about. That's Dr. Wes Crenshaw, a board-certified psychologist. He's the author of I Always Wanted to Be Where I'm Not, Successful Living with ADD and ADHD. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation with Dr. Wes Crenshaw in just a moment. We're talking about the relationship between young men and young women today. He has some surprising things to tell us, I think. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. The Ferguson Police Department has issued a statement today urging protesters to limit their activities related to Michael Brown's shooting death to the daylight hours only. As we heard earlier, Ferguson has been the site of nightly protests and unrest since Brown was killed on Saturday. Also today, volunteers are cleaning up businesses in Ferguson that were damaged and looted during protests on Sunday night. And more than 10,000 Illinois residents who bought insurance through President Barack Obama's health care law could have their coverage canceled if they don't send citizenship and immigration documents to confirm their eligibility, this by September 5th. Federal officials say they're sending letters to approximately 10,300 Illinois consumers asking for their paperwork. You can learn more about these and other stories this afternoon on St. Louis Public Radio and throughout the day at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with Dr. Crenshaw. Well, Wes, what's happening here? If there is a battle of the sexes, are the ladies winning?
They are winning, hands down. There's a book called The End of Man. I think that's the title.
It's a pretty ominous title, I would say.
Yeah, you know, all titles have to be giant in order to scare people into buying it. But the book is more about the same issue, where we have 60% of college graduates today are women and only 40% are men. And that has gone up in the last 3 years about 1 point a year. So, you know, if that trend line continues in 40 years, every college is going to be Vassar in 1963. Mm-hmm. There are going to be a lot of women and not very many men. And right now, to be a young white female is to be in a cohort of highly competitive applicants to just about any advanced program there is.
What's going on?
Well, the research tells us that boys are they don't like school. They don't like being there. They'll drop out of college quicker. The Fortune magazine claimed, and I think they see the world through an economically reductive lens, but they say that boys don't want to take on as much debt. When I talk to boys, it's a little different spin than that. It is, no, they don't want to take on much debt, but they use that more as a way to kind of excuse themselves to drop out. Girls will hang in there and keep piling on the debt, but they also graduate.
So what's wrong with this trend, if anything?
Well, women may favor it, other than they're now in competition with one another. But I think it is a signal of something much larger, that this generation of boys is having a lot harder time. Now, I am a student of history. I have a bachelor's degree in history, and I understand it's easy for us to sort of reboot every generation and say, wow, the kids are crazy. What's going on here? I think there are some trends here that are worse than we think they are on average. It's young men are just kind of bowing out of some of their roles in society that have been critical roles.
Well, I'm a little mystified as to the whys. I mean, certainly it's more complicated than fear of college debt.
No, yes, it is. So here is what I believe is going on. And I, anyone who wants to call in and debate this, by golly, I'm ready to go, because I see this almost literally every day in my office. This week, I've only did 2 days, and I probably saw it 3 or 4 times already. Young men are raised differently than young women. Young women are the daughters and granddaughters of feminism. Whether they identify themselves that way or not, they are taught from birth that they either better get up and take care of business, or they're going to be stuck in the ditch with some guy taking care of them. And this horrifies girls. And so they will, no matter what their difficulty, whether they have ADD or they're anxious or they're just a regular kid with not many impairments, they will struggle and struggle and struggle. And boys are raised, particularly white boys, are raised in a model of civilization that says they are entitled. We talk about the entitled generation. This is much harsher for boys. They sort of are taught, they open their arms to the sky and the presents will fall from heaven. And they don't have to work very hard at that. And this, I have a lesbian client I was telling this theory to, and she's in women's studies. And she looked at me and she said, wait a minute, are you telling me oppression is good? And I looked at her and I said, no, I'm telling you it's worked out a lot better for you than it has guys. And she said, ooh, I understand what you mean.
One of the things you point – I want to clarify one thing, by the way. With all the work you've done with ADD and ADHD, that's not necessarily a part of this. This is separate from that.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Don. It is different from that. Amongst the folks with ADD, this is an even more serious problem. But there's an awful lot of boys nowadays that kind of look like they ought to have ADD because of some of these things, and they don't. They just have some of the same characteristics, but that's a good point.
You say that that lessons can be learned from the feminist movement that would be useful to boys to shake them out of whatever is going on.
Yes, exactly. I think we have got to get serious about holding boys accountable and telling them this sort of apocalyptic message: if you don't get up and do it, you're doomed. I've had this conversation with kids, and there are a number of distractors in our society that make it harder for boys to do that. And we have to basically say to them, you got to try harder. And this is a cultural message they're not getting.
What are the detractors?
Yes, this is
– distractors, I'm sorry. Distractors.
They are attractors also. This is where it gets a little interesting, and you have to really know your sons or work with them in therapy to see how this works. There are about 4 of them, And I have slowly come to realize, my 10-year-old son and I were having this conversation at breakfast this morning, and he doesn't like this conversation. I've come to realize that at the pinnacle of the problem list is video gaming. When I was a young man and played video games, I had to put these round pellets into a machine called quarters, and the machine would give me something back. And we had a trade between the two of us. And when I ran out of quarters, that was the end for me. This does not apply anymore. And so there's unlimited gaming, and gaming is all give and no take. There is nothing anybody has to do to that except consume it. And so not only are there many, many hours a day, some boys play video games for 6 or 7 hours a day. Not only is that distracting from getting up and doing some other things like, I don't know, homework or football or something, it is also teaching boys a lack of reciprocity. They do not have to be reciprocal in relationships. Think how that works out in the dating pool then. Girls tend, on average, historically, not to be all give and no take, though that too is changing. And so girls are not expecting as much out of guys either.
We'll get to that part of it because it's another important part of it. But I want to just step back a little bit to something you implied a moment ago. You put the quarters in the machine and you got something back for that. This indicates to me that there is a – once again, we're using this term, we're using it a lot lately, this generational divide.
Yes.
What role does that play? I mean, kids, generally their parents are role models. I'm beginning to get the impression that you're suggesting that the parents maybe aren't the proper role models for these young people.
There is an element of that, but there's also an indulgence that we have given. I think it never fails to blow my mind when a wealthy family will come in and they will tell me how they don't understand why their child doesn't do anything. Now, they may even be just a middle-class family. And I say, well, what do you expect of them? And they say, oh, we have all these things we want them to do. And I say, well, what do they have to do to earn their privileges? And the answer is nothing. We bought them a car. It's usually a nice car. And then they wrecked it, and so we replaced it. And then we're buying their college education, and they don't really have to. Their job is school, so they don't have to work. And pretty much you find that this young person makes no connection to any contingency. They don't have to earn anything. And I teach people what I teach my kids, and that is, there ain't anybody gets anything for free. Girls adapt, even though we have this sort of image of the young woman in the beautiful car and, you know, perfectly toned body from the gym that her dad paid for. That exists, but in general, it is harder for boys to overcome that level of entitlement in life.
Entitlement is the word I was just going to use. A lot of people use that today with the current younger generation.
Well, and it's gotten to be a really mean term. It's sort of like a put down, and I'm trying to, you know, use it in a more clinical sense. When you believe the world operates without you having to trade with the world, put quarters in the machine to get something back, you come to believe that, you know, stuff's going to be handed to you. And we have a lot of boys living at home at 25 and 6 and 7 years of age, even now that the recession is lifting because of that.
What role does the fact that young women tend to mature more quickly than young men play?
I think that is important. The entire young adult generation, I think, has unmatured some in the 25 years I've been in graduate school or practicing. But on average, guys are maturing even later now. Adolescence seriously runs well into the mid-20s at this point. And girls seem to be able to handle that a little bit better. They seem to mature more quickly, as they always have, and also culturally become more ready for adulthood and for more coupling at that point than guys do.
And why are guys delayed in this respect?
Well, I'm going to go back and say the several distractors are such a critical element that I sit here frequently, and now I just ask on the intake, how much time do you spend playing video games? And rarely does someone look at me and go, why are you asking that? They're like, well, only about 7 hours. And it's so common, if someone's having a hard time in life, it connects back to that so frequently.
Well, I'm anticipating we're going to be getting some calls today. I want
from all the gamers. They're going
to
get
well,
on.
Well, we have one already. I'm going to go to Randy in just a minute, but I'll give the number. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air. But while we're talking about this, these distractions, let's bring in Randy, who is calling from Ferguson, a very familiar dateline. Randy, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I just want to say that I don't think I've ever heard anyone speak about video games while at the same time revealing that they know absolutely nothing about them. Because the way that you characterize a video game as take, 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 but no give, well, for one thing, half the video games out there that people play are actually involved interacting with other humans.
Absolutely, with the little headset.
And on top of that, and then this sense of entitlement. Okay, dude, I was really listening to this program. I was respecting you. But when you start talking about groups of people being entitled, all you're doing is prejudicing. You're not. That's not a clinical interpretation of what's happening. That's just completely subjective nonsense. Okay, so I'll just.
How many hours a day do you play?
I play about an hour and a half or 2 hours a day.
Well, then that's probably isn't a big problem for you, is it?
Well, yeah, but how do you know that it's a big problem for these other people? What evidence do you have?
Like to answer your question.
Okay,
they drop out of school. They can't hold a job. They live with their parents. Your turn.
So that there's a direct result correlation between people who play a lot of video games and drop out of school, because I think that's complete nonsense.
Why do you think there's only 40% of the graduates are guys? What is your theory?
I don't claim to know. You're the one that's claiming to know, and I'm asking you, and what you're saying isn't making any sense.
So do you know anyone for whom this is true? Do you remember? Let me ask you this a different question. Do you remember World of Warcraft?
Of course I do.
Do you think it was addictive?
I can't know. I would have to look at some data, and we'd have to sit down and identify parameters and define our terms. I can't know. I don't know if video games are addictive. I think that
are you aware that there are now treatment programs for video game addicts?
There's treatment programs for people that eat food too.
Right, because it's a behavioral addiction. It's a behavioral addiction. And behavioral addiction means two things, that you do something so much that you can't, that it has a deleterious effect on your life, and that you can't stop. Now, if you're telling me you play video games an hour a day, I don't think you're addicted. But do you not know people who play 7 or 8 hours a day and cannot stop? Do you know people like that?
I've been on summer vacation, and I've played Civilization V for 300 hours in the last month and a half.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So, and I'll just tell you that it was very good. In fact,
I bet. Why would you do it if it wasn't?
What?
Why would you do it if it wasn't really good? That's the reason.
I guess I'd play a different game. I don't know. But you're just generalizing. You're not referring to any specific evidence here. This is complete nonsense. This isn't scientific.
Randy, you've made your point. I'll get him to respond. We have a number of other callers who want to get in on this. Just a quick question to you. How old are you, Randy?
40.
You are? I don't believe you.
I'm also a professor.
Okay, Randy.
Of education.
Well, then you just need to look up the literature on that because it's there.
Randy.
Oh, I have. I have. That's why I called in, because it's not there.
Randy, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate your comments. Thank you. Let's take another one. Paul.
You can see this as an issue of great import to some people.
Well, obviously it is. And I'm not surprising, because this issue comes up from time to time. We always get this kind of response. Paul in St. Louis, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my phone call. I tend to think that right along with the gaming is the amount of young people that spend a lot of time gaming and using marijuana. Of course,
that's
other
correct.
Too, but the people that I've had any kind of contact with that use marijuana with the gaming, they spend long hours in their rooms, are in the basement with the television or the monitor, and that's what their life is. All their friends do the same thing. They spend a lot of time doing that, and I understand it, but I'm just saying that I think that really affects this generation as to how they mature and the fact that they're not out looking for jobs, they're not pursuing education to make themselves ready for a job. I think that's a big factor.
Well, if you really want to get some people to call up, I'll add to it that certainly marijuana use at this point, whether you live in Colorado or not, is as if it were legal. It's not difficult to get marijuana. High school kids can get marijuana probably more easily than alcohol. And it's now a heavy use pattern. There are people who use, you know, what I would call recreationally once in a while. But usually the typical use pattern is very heavy. And I hate to say it goes along with video gaming because then, of course, people are going to be like, no, they are not correlated. But the description you are giving of the person who smokes a lot every day and plays a lot of games, and the other one I hadn't even mentioned yet, is there's a tremendous amount of online pornography use, which has its own issues. And part of the problem in trying to do the research on some of this stuff is that teasing out from this myriad of issues that young men are engaged in, which thing is the controlling factor is, you know, of course, impossible. You can't do controlled studies on that. But I would agree with the caller. It's another of the components.
It would seem to me that another of the controlling factors is the electronic gadgetry itself. And is people are so preoccupied, and not only young people, so totally preoccupied with the tablets and the phones and the other things.
You're absolutely right. And for young women tend to do all the things we just talked about, but they do them differently. They do every one of these, but they do them differently, less, what I would say, intensely. One of the exceptions to that is Tumblr. I know young women who will refuse to get a Tumblr because they know their friends use it and are kind of addicted to it in the sense that they do it more than they should and just cannot stop. So social media type things absolutely come into play here too.
Wes Crenshaw is our guest, and we're talking about the differences between young men and young women these days and the things that make and contribute to these differences. We have lots of calls. We'll come back and take them when we come back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again. Welcome back to our conversation with Dr. Wes Crenshaw, talking about the differences between young men and young women these days and what's causing these differences. We have a number of calls. I want to get to them, but a lot of it centers on gaming. I want to get away from that a little bit for the moment because we want to talk about this coupling situation that you mentioned. When I see the word coupling, I think it's like from the 18th century or 19th century or what have you. But explain what's going on here. This is quite dramatic also.
Yeah, you have to go back a long way in time to even use the terms like dating and courting and coupling. I kind of still like those. But it's interesting that marriage is in decline also. And they're for two reasons. A lot of people in the last 10 or 15 years have early divorce. I had a ton of cases that weren't even around for divorce where I had people that were under 26 or 7 that have already been through a marriage and finished it off. And we see that in the national trends that back in about the 60s, early 60s, there were about two-thirds of all 20-somethings were married. And today that's about 26%. And I think this is the trend line. I think young people are – it's sort of ironic now that gay marriage is becoming really a possibility. Straight marriage is headed down the tubes. And young people have been raised, I think, in a culture of divorce and disposability. And I'm not bagging on divorce. Divorce is an important part of our process. But I think kids see relationships as terminable now more than ever before.
But isn't that a good thing to wait until getting married?
Sure.
I mean, a lot of divorces occurred because people married young and they were immature and too young to marry.
Research tells us the older you are up to about the age of 27, the higher percentage likelihood that your relationship will survive. So you're absolutely right. And we have always encouraged kids to wait a little longer. But the real interesting thing is they're not even seeing themselves in the late teens and to mid-adult, young adult years as marriageable people. They're not coupling in that way. They're not developing exclusive relationships.
But there are societal elements as well. I mean, kids are having a hard time finding jobs, whether they go to college or not. And therefore, that would tend to postpone this sort of thing.
It can, yeah. I think if we threw out the word marriage, the bigger issue is the idea of the exclusive relationship. That is a minority status at this point. Young people are much more into what is now – I thought I coined the term hookup culture. culture a few years ago. And now that is like a really popular term. So I'd like some royalties or something on that, but apparently not.
Good luck.
Yeah, really. But I think that the idea that relationships lead naturally in a progression towards exclusivity is becoming far less an important part of the culture, and that will in turn lead to a less marriage down the road.
Let's get some calls in. We have a number of them. We'll start with Bill calling from St. Louis. Bill, go ahead. You're on the air with Wes Quinshaw.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
Hey, I'm an epitome of everything you're talking about. Unsupervised as a kid, spent a lot of time playing video games. And what I think it's all about instant gratification. That's what
it
makes
is.
It so addicting. It's just like you can be a hero in an hour, while most skills and things in life take months and years that you have to commit. And this, that instant gratification is so addicting. I spend so much time on the internet looking at the same things. Internet pornography is a little bit of a problem. I'm not perverted or anything. It's just instant. You know, it's extremely entertaining or whatever. I'm really trying hard to get over it. Taking low doses of Adderall, trying to set goals. But I was wondering if you have any other tips or anything like that.
Well, you are very self-aware, my friend, because you said it very well right there. The idea, this is when I said it's all give and no take. That I'm not saying it's not social. It's absolutely a social activity for people who can play games with people all over the world. What it is that it gives you that exact thing you're talking about, the instant gratification and the sense of heroism. And sadly enough, me and Don's world out here, we're not as big a heroes as yes, we can be in a video game. We just have to get up every day and go to work and do our gig. And this is hard for young people because the world is disappointing. And I think part of my research in this is it's all qualitative. I hear the exact thing you're saying every day of the week, exactly how you just said it so beautifully. Tips, I think I'm going to totally fall back to the good old standard. You find a good coach, therapist that's directive with you and able to help you really set small goals toward larger or small objectives towards larger goals. And you just want to get up every day, which is the first organizational task to begin with, get out of bed, and do the thing that will that day makes you successful. It doesn't have to be a big thing, but the more of those days you add up, the more you're going to feel like you have what's called self-efficacy.
Thanks so much for the call. Hope that is helpful for you, Bill. Let's bring in Fred calling from Belleville. Fred, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Hi.
Go ahead.
So talking about the sense of entitlement you were talking about earlier, about your example about the kids from the wealthier middle-class families, where they don't really have to work for anything, their parents buy their car and everything. I guess I came from a kind of opposite setting. My parents were always pretty strict. It was all about work versus reward and all that. And thankfully, through all their guidance and all that, I earned a full ride to school, to college. And just being raised from early on with that sense of you have to work to get what you want, that I think that's been incredible, especially because it was focused at an earlier point in my life.
Very nice story. And I'll change up gender slightly because we were talking about boys, but I had a girl I saw who had exactly this problem of her parents funding everything, and she couldn't convince them that she should go to a hair styling school instead of four-year college because she knew she wasn't going to make it in a four-year college. And she wanted to just come out to them and tell them, this is what I want to do. And I said, why can't you just do that? She said, I can never go against my parents because they've given me everything in my life. And I looked at her and I said, I'm really glad I grew up poor. It's a very good story.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the call. I'm hearing a lot of self-awareness here amongst
the
calls.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
So far, I am too.
And it bears noting that is, I sound like I'm bagging on young men. You hear such remarkable young people, like the young people who cleaned up the Quick Trip. Those people are out there. They're the majority. Yeah. They're the people who are pulling for it.
Right. Let's bring in Martin calling from St. Louis. Martin, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Thank you, gentlemen. Good conversation. I just want to bring up the point that one of the reasons I think that men are dropping out of college and not doing as well in society is it goes back to this whole transpersonal philosophy that undergirds feminism and so many others that teaches you have to overthrow the shackles of oppression, you have to fight against the man, you have to find your own right and wrong, your own values, and your own sense of self. And in that context, we have political correctness, which says that you have to be sensitive to everybody except white males. and it's open season on white males, and it seems to me that white males are responding today like Vietnam veterans did when they came back to the U.S. and didn't feel they were received very well or treated very well and didn't assimilate society very well.
That usually is a point that comes up when we do this show in different places, and I don't have a great response to it. I think that everyone else who hears that is sort of like, gee, it sounds like all the entitlement of several hundred years is not valid now because we're picking on white men. They still are the dominant culture in our society, in politics, in business, and everywhere else. And my concern is that that is not going to turn out well because young men see this example and do not – it isn't that they feel oppressed. It is that they feel they will not have to get up and do what the rest of us have done to achieve it. It looks like we've taught them that this just came to us. And we instead have to take the rules of feminism and say, hey, boys, you need to overcome the oppression that in many ways is within you to be successful.
That dominance also is not going to last. By 2040, as I understand it, whites will be the largest minority in the country.
Correct, and it appears we'll be enslaved by women by that time.
Well, let's bring a woman into the conversation. Sally is joining us from St. Louis. Sally, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to comment. I'm a single mom raising a son who is 10, mm-hmm. and I've researched this a lot. I'm actually a psychology student, and I read a book recently called Free to Learn, Why Unleashing the Instinct to Play Will Make Our Children Happier, and I'd like to give a different perspective on gaming. I think what we have occurring in our society is a reflection of our schooling and how we're bringing up our children, how we're educating them, and they often don't have the time to play and control their own lives. Their parents are micromanaging every minute of their lives and overscheduling them. And gaming is a chance for them to take control and have some time to themselves and actually feel like they're in charge of their lives. I've seen with my own son, he loves gaming. However, you know, I've given him free range. And now at 10, you know, he's happy to go outside and play all day as well, because I've never made it something that was negative. I see the positive in it as well.
I hear where you're coming from, and there's a couple of things I would say about it. I think that I do not see the helicopter parents in this society. I know they exist. I see people who are not paying enough attention to their kids' behavior and that their kids are out doing – I'm just kind of amazed at the things I know that the kids are doing that the parent has no vague clue about. So I don't know that I really see people micromanaging very much. I know they exist. I don't see it as as big a problem. In terms of the gaming, I'm not suggesting that we load up the trucks and take all the video games and dump them in the Missouri River and watch them wash down the Mississippi. I'm suggesting that gaming is a dessert. It's a kind of play. And play is a dessert, and play for younger children is a part of learning, and it's kind of their work. But if we put all of our energies into gaming, which young people do in some degree, or pornography or whatever it is, then a lot of things don't get done. And so gaming's a great dessert. It's a great thing to do. They're recommended, just like our professor suggested, it's about an hour, hour and a half a day. You do that, and that's great. Have at it. It's where it becomes excessive, and I think – I don't know quite what you mean by free range, but I think if you're not providing some context and some limit on those games, they will eventually come back and bite you.
Thanks for the call. I have an email here from Jim, a couple of interesting points. He graduated high school in 75 and said his generation was among the first where women were allowed in many areas of the physical sciences. For example, Princeton did not allow women to enter graduate school in astronomy until 76. We have an entire generation of my age where some of these thresholds were just being broken. So, of course, our generation would want our daughters to take advantage of the opportunities.
You bet. In fact, when we did this column in my newspaper column, my teen co-author basically said that. She said, well, I'm not too sad about the state of affairs. Oh, my gosh, the letters rolled in from young men and how she was being mean to them and not worrying about their futures. And all she was saying is it's good that women are on the upward swing. I am down with that. What I don't want to see happen is young men go on the downward swing.
Jim also writes, I've heard many stories and seeing many examples from 20-somethings who are not getting married because the guys are too controlling and don't know how to have a normal, trusting relationship.
I would agree sort of with that. It is a weird dichotomy, and young women have much to say about this. We did a show where young women came on and had a lot to say about it, in fact, and it's on my website. And controlling is there, but more than anything, girls see guys as something that rhymes with sloosh hag. They don't see them as very competent intimate partners right now, and so guys will want everything that a relationship offers: sex, cuddling, love, kindness, companionship. They just don't want to pay for it in the sense of giving an obligation, of saying, you are my girlfriend. Getting a guy to say, you are my girlfriend, it seems like you need to electrocute him. And this is frustrating because that's the pattern of coupling that leads to long-term relationships. And some of the nicest guys I work with in couples and individual, nice guys, I like them. I like seeing them. Cannot do this now.
Let's bring in Fritz calling from Manchester. Go ahead, Fritz.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. The only thing I really wanted to say was, my grandfather came from Europe, worked very hard. My father, too. And these are the examples that I learned from. I worked my way through college and into the workforce. And when you have to struggle and when you have to work, it creates a depth of character that carries you through life. Young men today, from the ones that I run across, I cannot understand them. I'm 51 years old. Granted, there's a bit of a generational difference. I understand that. But I simply don't understand, and I don't know if this is a factor of parenting or the type of society that we have, but perhaps you guys can help me to understand. I just don't get it, and that's all I had to say.
I think that explaining it is more about is understanding how we need to just give up this idea that as we become prosperous, it's wise to hand that down to our kids. William Buffett has that famous thing where he doesn't give his kids anything, rich billionaire. And I think that is the right way to go. My kids, my son Alex, who's with me on this trip, cleans my office every week. He comes in and he gets the vacuum out and he cleans the toilet and all this, and I pay him. And that is how he earns his money. He's buying his way into Cedar Point this week when we go up there. And he, I don't pay him $50 an hour or anything. The IRS would have a problem with that. But I pay him minimum wage. And he knows if he wants to buy something, that is how he gets it. And that is how I was brought up, like you. I'm the child of people that grew up in the Depression. And I think that has been a positive thing for me.
Only a couple of minutes left. I take Andrew's call, but I don't think we have time. I'll try to tell you what he's talking about. Birth rates are in decline in relation to maturity. That's his question. Is that happening? I also had a note sent to me this morning saying the birth rate for unmarried women is declining. So this is all part of what you're talking about?
Yeah. Wow. That's a whole nother show.
Right.
Young women today, more than I've ever seen in 22 years, are saying, I don't ever want to be a mom. And I say, yeah, because you're 18. And they say, no, you don't understand. I don't ever want to be a mom. And they're very militant about it. And I'm not at the bottom yet of what that's about. But I see this trend very commonly and well into their 20s. They're not thinking about that anymore.
Okay, a minute left. How do we stop this tailspin for young men?
Well, I don't want to say there's a whole generation lost, like back in the 20s, the lost generation. But I do think we've got to start with little kids and work our way up. And for the kids who are already at their puberty, you can still make a big difference. For one tiny step to take, put your kid on a budget. If you want to give your kid money, okay, give them $200 a month. And then they need to buy with that money the things they are going to buy. Now, the prevalence and use of marijuana is so high that I have to admit at this point that gets to be a little bit of a problem because they may use it for that. So if you want to have more say over that budget, maybe they need to account for that money. But let them learn to earn and spend. Just that alone will get you off to a better start.
Right. Well, the parents have to play a significant role. There's no question about that. They can't just give them the video games and say, go ahead and let the video game babysit the young man or the young woman.
I know people who let their kids earn time on video games by doing tasks around the house and give them some time in exchange. That's a reciprocity too. And coach kids on how to have a relationship. Don't reinforce the kind of negative behaviors that we see in the dating pool right now.
Very quickly, where can folks go to learn more about what you're talking about?
DrWest.com. It's dr-west.com, and a whole bunch of our material is on there about this topic for free.
We'll put a link to our website. Wes Crenshaw, thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with alumni of Cultural Leadership about how the program has increased their awareness of and action on social justice issues and get their take on the issues surrounding the Ferguson shooting. We'll also hear from environmentalist Lois Gibbs about lessons learned from Love Canal. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast from stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.